Tuesday, March 8th, 2018. Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. Well, to start with some breaking news today, I'm sure many have already seen that the United States has officially pulled out of the JCPOA, the Iran nuclear deal. And it's something I think is very important to cover here because it has a lot of implications. Now, I'm just going to run down some of the notes I took while he was speaking and really just kind of elaborate on why this is so important and why this is a very hypocritical move for the United States. So ultimately, he starts off by simply just addressing that the U.S. is officially pulling out of the Iran nuclear deal. And he claims that they are now, that the United States government is now levying the, quote, highest level of economic sanctions, which is frustrating in general because I've often pointed out that that affects the people the most. But he goes on to say that that anyone that ultimately helps Iran continue with their nuclear program will also be targeted by the United States government. He went again, reiterated the point of calling Iran the leading state sponsor of terror. Now, just to address that point specifically, I'm never trying to claim that Iran does not have its own efforts underway around the world, like I point out a lot of these governments do. But to label them the leading state sponsor of terror, this title that was given to them by the Trump administration, it's very disingenuous for many reasons, because clearly we can point out people like Israel and Saudi Arabia who are verifiable supporters of the very terrorism that the U.S. claims to be fighting around the world, yet that gets completely ignored. And the idea that Iran is part of, or the leading state sponsor of terror, is just an arbitrary claim that really has no base in reality. Again, not to say that they don't support their own efforts around the world to fight against people like Israel or even just to carry out some kind of terrible events around the world. It still doesn't mean that they can be arbitrarily labeled the leading state sponsor of terror. I mean, clearly that's an effort to make the, to hang that title on them to justify all the actions we're seeing. It's very interesting to see that played out because it is very much a baseless claim in the larger scheme. He also goes on to claim that they are continuing to fund terrorist proxies to carry out their efforts around the world. Who does that sound like? Just like the United States government's doing all over the world, in particular in Syria and many other places. Again, just these very hypocritical claims, disregarding the fact that the United States government is verifiably doing just that. So the audacity to point at them saying they're doing that, meanwhile the U.S. government's doing the same thing, is it's just wildly hypocritical. And I constantly try to point this out for people. He then goes on to also point out that they are plundering the wealth of their own people, which, again, just like the United States is doing to the American people. I mean, we've pointed out many times that, you know, I personally think taxation is theft, as many people do. But it's funny to see this pointed out while we're seeing our money go towards all of these ridiculous, gross overuse of military endeavors around the world with our money. Meanwhile, things are suffering in this country. It's pretty much the exact same thing, plundering the wealth of the people to be used for its own endeavors, which is literally what it claimed Iran was doing. So again, just a very hypocritical claim by the U.S. government. Trump states that Iran has continued to enrich its uranium, which, as if to imply that that's not allowed within the current deal. And I truly think this was intentionally meant to manipulate those who don't really understand the ins and outs of this. There's a very big difference between a military nuclear program and an energy program, which was allowed under the current Iran deal. And that's what's interesting, is they continue to point this out as if enriching uranium is somehow against the rules. And it's not. It's been verified many times over by groups like the IAEA, the International Atomic Energy Agency, that they are in fact simply moving forward within the parameters of the deal towards a nuclear energy program, like many other countries in the world. Yet they continue to point that out just by, and claiming just to enriching uranium for the average American, just like, oh my God, it's uranium, that's nuclear, they're going for making bombs, which is, you know, maybe, but the point is that all the investigations and the monitoring from the International Atomic Energy Agency has shown that that was verifiably not the case. So this is just simply a word thrown out there, or a phrase thrown out there, with the clear intention of manipulating the way people see this. Because the overall effort of this speech in itself was to try to garner support for what they're trying to do. Then he went on, I mean, this is the worst part for me. Donald Trump went on to claim, quote, definitive proof, and then references Israel's verifiably fake proof, even though the U.S. already essentially backtracked on supporting that, even deleted its tweet and changed its press release claiming a clerical error. And now all of a sudden they're right back on the front of it saying, yeah, you know, Israel has definitive proof that Iran is seeking a nuclear weapons program. And it's been pointed out many times over that what Israel pointed out was simply old information from 2009, if I think that was the correct date, and then just kind of asserting the fact that it's happening now. There was really no connection there. And again, I have to reassert the point that the International Atomic Energy Agency has been on the ground. They've gone through every single area. They've pointed out many, many times that they have complete unfettered access, and they've verified that they are not seeking a nuclear weapons program, but yet this is what they're going with. This is their definitive proof. Sounds very similar to Syria, right? Where even in Syria, we weren't even allowed to see this so-called proof, but this proof has been debunked. It's been shown that it's absolutely not true. That's not even to take into consideration Israel's ongoing effort to try to demonize Iran to carry out its geopolitical efforts. So this is just very frustrating to see. The IAEA actually said, quote, no credible evidence of an Iranian nuclear weapons program. That's their own words. So this is very frustrating to see these blatant lies reiterated, reasserted in an effort to kind of muster support for this move, even though we know it's not true. And an interesting point to make that was made by a few different articles is that the idea that Iran very clearly, recognizably, has not in any way violated the nuclear agreement. But in fact, the United States government has on numerous different points. I mean, if once you actually, and I don't have to get into this again, I'll put some information in the bottom for you to check out. But through the actual deal, many different sections of the deal, the United States has verifiably broken the agreement. So it's just very clear that I think, in my opinion, Donald Trump specifically is majorly influenced by people like John Bolton and other people in his administration prior to this who are very war hawkish. They want this to happen. And so now we're seeing this all push towards intentionally sabotaging the Iran deal. And that's what we're seeing play out today. He also went on to say that the deal as in no way possible is able to stop Iran's support for terrorism, which I found kind of interesting. I found that to be very revealing in a lot of ways. We've already talked about how, you know, the idea of how naming them the leading state sponsor of terrorism is kind of disingenuous. But what's really ridiculous is this deal is not in any way about stopping terrorism. That's what's kind of interesting, that they're clearly trying to jumble these things together. And ultimately, too, the idea that, back to the hypocritical aspect, the U.S. supports more terrorist groups around the world than anyone. So it seems all this stuff is just very jumbled together in a way to kind of rile up the people. And like the real point here is Trump's entire speech, as usual, was chock full of words meant to invoke emotional responses, because this is really not about facts or truth. It's about manufacturing support for yet another unjustified regime change. And Trump gives a laughably disingenuous message to the Iranian people, saying that the long-suffering people of Iran, the American people, stand with you. Yet the U.S. government openly and actively supports the MEK, a group that Iranians vehemently oppose, and the Trump admin has already banned Iranians from the U.S. So just clearly this entire speech was meant directed at the people who do no due diligence, that simply just lap up what they're saying and, you know, trying to muster as much support as possible. And really it all comes back to the sanctions, where we've said many times over, hurt predominantly the Iranian people, not the government themselves, in an effort to try to hurt them so they lash out at their government, which is what the Trump administration wants at this point. So this disgustingly disingenuous claim that they're there to support the Iranian people, it lacks any actual evidence to back it up. It's all about hurting them in every way possible to hurt the government itself. And actually, as a very well-put article from the Anti-Media today put it, quote, perhaps the most absurd aspect of President Trump's Iran policy is his attempt to claim solidarity with the Iranian people. Even as he bans Iranians from the U.S. and his top advisors openly support the MEK terrorist group that is universally reviled by Iranians, the Iranian people overwhelmingly support the nuclear deal, at least until the sanctions relief that was promised failed to materialize, and will be the party most impacted by Trump's decision. the people is what it's saying there. And it goes on to say, a potential opening for accelerated progress on Iran has now been slammed shut by Trump, an action that will redirect attention from the Iranian government to the United States. This will not just empower hardliners. It will force Iran's political elite to paper over fissures on key social and political issues while cracking down further on any dissent. This is potentially the biggest crime of Trump's decision, limiting the agency of Iran's own people to choose peaceful political evolution in order to address their grievances. This article does an excellent job of really summing up what's really going on here and kind of cutting through all the BS. Trump goes on to say, quote, there has been enough death and destruction. Let it end now. I guess by more war and yet another destabilized country and another added to the list of decimated nations liberated by the U.S. Trump literally said in his speech that, quote, the future belongs to the Iranian people, followed by all the usual jingoistic words and phrases meant to rile up the blindly patriotic into thinking the U.S. is simply out there spreading freedom to the oppressed, even while we lose what little we have at home. And despite this lie meant to elicit this emotional response having been shown to be such utter BS over the many years of regime change, coups, and assassinations that leave the country a focus in absolute ruin until the U.S. gets what it wants and moves on, leaving the people it claimed to be fighting for to fend for themselves as the power vacuum sucks in all the surrounding extremists that the U.S. will later support in its feigned fight for freedom. Libya is a perfect example of those people that the U.S. were trying to liberate from Gaddafi, yet are the same ones currently being sold in open slave markets, being conducted by the groups the U.S. funded and supported to overthrow Gaddafi. But we don't hear about that. We just move on to the next country and never look back. But we have to start looking back. I truly believe this is simply a way to essentially force Iran into pursuing a military nuclear program as a way of pure self-preservation, as opposed to the civilian energy program that has verifiably been underway, despite the proven lies of Israel and the U.S. capitulation to them. All in order to carry out what has been shown 100 times over with documented evidence to support, to be the long-sought plan for Iran, which all the U.S. actions up until this point make abundantly clear. The Trump admin even tried to claim a while back that the Iran was not adhering to the deal, which they're still kind of doing in a weird way, until that was essentially shown to be incorrect. So then simply shifted to saying, oh, well, the deal is bad. That's why. Forget the lie we just tried to sell you. It's the deal is just not a good one. That's what we're going to go with now. It's just very ridiculous and transparent when you know what you're looking for. Just like we've been saying for years, here comes Iran's liberation. And despite the Iranian threats, if the U.S. pulled out of the deal, which they've been talking about for this last week, it appears that Iran has said it will remain in the deal, stating that the U.S. actions are illegal and that they are choosing to simply deal with other countries now for a new nuclear deal. As Iranian President Hassan Rouhani said, he has ordered his foreign minister to negotiate with other countries to maintain a nuclear agreement, showing yet again that they are committed to the deal and that the one that the U.S. just openly tried to sabotage, all based on clear lies and propaganda. As we have seen with the Russian decision not to retaliate after the illegal and completely unfounded attack on Syria that was based on the lies of a group that was just defunded by the U.S. government, it seems that the rest of the world is beginning to see the true value in letting cooler heads prevail. Yet I have no doubt the U.S. will ignore this step and carry out its agenda of regime change on Iran that they have sought openly for decades now. So all that information taken into consideration, we have to really see what's going on behind the scenes here. So try not to let yourself get wrapped up in all the extreme over-the-top patriotism that's going to be flooded around this story in order to keep you looking at what they want you to see. Moving on to the next story coming from ZeroHedge.com, we could rarely have sex without him beating me. New York AG Schneiderman resigns after multiple abuse allegations. Now, this is just a quick one I want to touch on for one very specific reason. And it's interesting to see that Schneiderman was one of the most prominent voices in the hashtag MeToo movement. And he has now resigned after the damning story that came out in New Yorker magazine, wherein 4 prominent women have levied some pretty serious allegations at him, basically saying he beat them and he forced them into some weird sexual situations. If you were interested in that story, go read the article. There's a lot of things flying around. At this point, they're allegations. You know, I this wouldn't surprise me. It doesn't surprise me, as we pointed out many times throughout all of these discussions, that this is something, and that I made pretty clear yesterday, these kind of things are more common than we'd like to admit within these elite circles. So, you know, whether or not this turns out to be true, I would probably lean towards the fact that it's probably pretty true. I mean, the fact that he resigned after the story is a pretty clear insight that he knows something's going down. And I think it's very revealing to see that he was, you know, one of the leading voices in this Me Too movement, which really lends credence to the idea that the Honeybee and myself had discussed in previous videos, where, you know, in discussing the Me Too movement and the timing of it, where we really discussed the idea that this was being used to hide behind and really as a way to distract from much larger issues that were coming out in regard to child sex trafficking and pedophilia in these same circles. Weinstein kind of opened up this box to a lot of the mainstream people, and they quickly diverted your attention to just some kind of, you know, weird adult on adult sexual allegations of smacking someone's butt, or, you know, really kind of surface level, which in their own right are important. And I think that it did do some good things. And it's not to say that there's not some very real people that were taken advantage of within the Me Too movement. But I truly think that that movement was hijacked in order to keep us away from the real story, what was really going on behind it, the real gritty, dirty part behind it all, which does come back to sex trafficking and things like that. And where I want to get in with this story, the reason I bring it up today specifically, is because it turns out that Schneiderman was the very person who tried to shut down the NXIVM investigation a month ago. So very interesting connection there, because the NXIVM story, despite the mainstream media kind of glancing over these real points, is deeply connected to child sex trafficking and pedophilia. It's within the very information released about this, the actual legal documents, but it's getting kind of just brushed over as, you know, sex trafficking, which is important. But I feel like they're forced to cover this because of how prominent it is. But at the end of the day, it's very interesting how all this ties together. And it seems that there's a very clear effort to keep our attention anywhere else except the pedophilia and the child sex trafficking that is a very huge problem in this country and is clearly tied to these elite circles. So I find it very revealing that he was the one specifically that tried to shut this investigation down. And now we're finding out that he's tied to all this weird, aggressive sexual acts, and very interesting. So we'll definitely follow up on the story and let you know what goes on. But I think it's pretty clear that he's got some pretty, you know, dark things going on behind the scenes. And now we are seeing just today that a criminal probe has been launched against Schneiderman. So clearly there's much to this story, and I think this is going to continue to pan out. But I think it's very important that we don't get distracted by kind of the story of the day. And we need to dig into the real darkness behind all of this and the story that never gets addressed. And I, you know, as always, I will put in a lot of good information in the show notes so you can really dig into the general story for yourself. But I recommend people like Titus Frost and the Honeybee who make it a point to really uncover some of this stuff for you. So really get into the story, and we'll follow what happens with him and make sure we come back and revisit this so you know how it turns out. Moving on to the next story, coming from thedailysheeple.com, DEA knowingly let admitted addicts, dealers, prescribe drugs. Admitted drug addicts and dealers were among the hundreds of thousands of people and businesses the Drug Enforcement Administration licensed to manufacture, distribute, or prescribe pharmaceuticals over the past 12 years. The agency stripped only 240 licenses for wrongdoing over the same period. The DEA's Office of Diversion Control, which is responsible for issuing and revoking the permits, is, by law, fully funded by the license's application fees. Gee, what if I've never seen a more pure example of a glaringly obvious profit motive. I mean, that's just, it's ridiculous to see. I mean, this is kind of the things, once you dig in, scratch past the surface, you see this on a lot of these government agencies, that they have a direct profit motive, usually set up by the companies themselves, or at least lobbied and influenced into existence. So they have a profit motive not to do exactly what we're seeing, or to stop the people causing the problem, exactly like we're seeing here. More than 1.7 million individuals and organizations held licenses as of March 2018, an increase of more than 510,000 since August of 2006, the earliest publicly available data. One dentist, for example, admitted to helping an outlaw motorcycle gang manufacture methamphetamine in the early 2000s, which resulted in 2 years of jail time. He previously had been caught with meth several times and admitted to a history of substance abuse with alcohol, marijuana, and methamphetamines and cocaine. The DEA gave him a license to prescribe certain drugs in September of 2013. I mean, think about that. I mean, so disregarding a very clear history of these problems, and it's just, it's frustrating to see how this plays out. I mean, this is a small aspect of such a larger problem. And this is even while this opiate epidemic was continuing to explode. Another example, a doctor was caught distributing cocaine in 1981, but wasn't prosecuted because he cooperated with authorities. And the DEA documents show this explicitly. He was arrested again in 2001 with cocaine and two prescription drugs, an opiate and a minor tranquilizer. He pleaded guilty to related charges in 2003. The DEA gave him a license to prescribe drugs in 2009. This article I highly recommend you get into. There's a lot of information, but this, it just shows you such a ridiculous contradiction. The very job of what they're supposed to be doing is being allowed to just slip through their fingers because they have a direct profit motive. The more licenses they give out, the more money they get in through these fees. And it's also a direct profit motive not to revoke them because they make more money. I mean, there's much more going on here than just profit, but it just shows you such a ridiculous contradiction. The very job of the DEA is supposed to be stopping these kind of things, yet they're the ones directly keeping it going. And this all in the face of one of the largest problems in this country. How many tens of thousands of people die directly related to opiate overdose and abuse, and yet we see this continue. It's just disgusting, and it just shows you how much these feigned words and political efforts to fight this problem mean absolutely nothing when all these people are directly tied to these pharmaceutical companies and they have their hands in all the politicians' pockets. That just, I mean, I've talked about this so many times, and I never get tired of pointing it out because it's something that really shows you not just how they control our politicians in regard to big pharma, but that how our politicians are completely bought out by these lobbyists, something we have to begin to see. Moving on to the next story coming from mintpressnews.com, Trump swaps funds after deciding Syria recovery not as useful as arming rebels, including former ISIS fighters. Back in March, amid speculation that President Donald Trump would push for a withdrawal of U.S. troops from Syria, his administration froze $200 million in funds intended for recovery efforts in Syria. Those funds were intended to rebuild infrastructure such as roads, water lines, and the power grid in areas of Syria decimated by U.S. coalition strikes. Since then, the cutting of the U.S. humanitarian aid in Syria has continued, despite the fact that a withdrawal of U.S. troops from Syria is now highly unlikely. New evidence, however, now shows that those U.S. recovery funds are still intended for use in Syria, though they won't be going towards any humanitarian causes. According to a portion of the Pentagon's budget titled the Overseas Contingency Operations Request and Counter ISIS Train and Equip Fund, the U.S. has allocated $300 million to arm and equip 65,000 soldiers who are part of the U.S. partner forces in northeastern Syria. That area of Syria is currently occupied by the U.S. and its proxies, such as the Syrian Democratic Forces, what has been shown to be essentially the very same terrorists it claims to be fighting, only they're being funded and armed by your tax dollars in an attempt to overthrow the democratically elected Assad government. The Pentagon's request also calls for $250 million more to be used in building border security in Syria, bringing the total request for military aid to U.S. proxies to $550 million, a figure significantly higher than the amount of recovery funds that were frozen. The Pentagon's request was approved as part of the budget signed into law by Trump on March 23rd. 1 week later, The Wall Street Journal first reported that recovery funds for Syria had been frozen. The timing of the request's approval seems to suggest that the aid money was cut specifically in order to be allocated to arm U.S. proxies in Syria, essentially a straight-up swap of humanitarian aid for military backing. Just as the author puts it, the U.S. government once again has revealed that its counterterrorism strategy is not about stopping terrorism, but using it in order to fulfill long-standing geopolitical goals for Syria and the region. So consider this as the new agenda for regime change efforts in Iran and Venezuela, which was just the target of some fresh sanctions, is carried out laughably in the name of freedom. For more information on the topics discussed, make sure you check out thelastamericanvagabond.com or one of the important independent sources in the show notes below. And as always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.